I am so delighted tonight that we have with us, all the way from St. Croix, Sydney Solis, who is going to be talking with us tonight. Her topic is A Lifeboat and a Compass, Helping Youth and Families Heal Through Yoga and Story. And I don't want to take any more time away from you, Sydney. If you would like to just jump in, the floor is yours for the next half hour. And I do ask listeners if they'd put their calls on mute so that we can hear Sydney well. And after about half hour, we'll come back and have a discussion. So welcome, Sydney.
Well, thank you so much, Lanny. I'm very grateful. Namaste. Greetings to all of you joining me, and thanks to the Healing Story Alliance. And I want to thank all my teachers, everyone who has always influenced me and taught me, whether my yoga teachers or storytelling teachers, especially those Sims, and all the wonderful people in Colorado, Colorado Tellers, and especially Susan Kaplan, good people who have influenced me throughout my life, and always grateful to honor them. So, yes, good evening. I'm talking to you from St. Croix, and I hope my phone doesn't go out. We have body service here, but I think we'll be blessed with some good communication tonight, the night before a full moon. So, A Lifeboat and a Compass. My work in story time yoga encompasses so much. And I thought, well, lately in my journey of 9 years of doing story time yoga, it has arrived at, what is this? It's a lifeboat and a compass, that yoga is the lifeboat. It's a refuge for us to help us manage life. What do we retreat to? And then, you know, it is the healing. It is the therapy. It's yoga therapy, the healing effect in our lives. And then story, that is the compass, that is the medicine, that is the guides in our life that give meaning and hope. And in these days and age, it's something we really, really need. And in retrospect, these last few months, this winter has been a difficult winter. But what is it that I really do? I realize I put people in touch with their depth through the body, image, and word. Be it art, poetry, or storytelling, we connect with the intuitive and feeling functions of our psyche, and we learn and heal that way. The yoga and stories, I'm helping embody minds and people through embodied storytelling. And in my process of work, it's gone from story time yoga, which was a more educational, using stories to teaching tales, certain themes for kids, and acting out these stories with yoga, until it became a yoga play therapy, realizing that so many play therapists would train with me and that it was really a great vehicle to heal one's mental health. A lot of parents were surprised. You didn't think my ADHD child had any problems? I can't believe how well they focus listening to you. But yoga and stories naturally assist people who have ADHD, ADD, addiction, depression, anxiety, because in yoga, these things are considered a vata imbalance, and there's doshas that are in nature, and vata is air, space, taking us out of the body. I feel like there are some keys to healing our imagination, being able to connect to the mystery of life. Joseph Campbell, the mythologist, says that everything is economic or political. We've lost that natural, mystical, ecstatic connection to the mystery. We inherently have to have a relationship to it. And that's what the art and story do. If they access, you know, that intuitive feeling sides of our mind that have been cut off in our intellectual society and the body. You know, it has a relationship with our body, and there is say that the body is the subconscious mind, where we intuit, where we feel. And we need strong community to be able to really access and heal together. We also need nature. I mean, the body is part of nature. The rhythm and cycles of nature, we've been so far separated from it, from the intellectual takeover of our bodies and life. And then food is tied up with it, too. Ayurveda. Yoga has a component, a citric component of Ayurveda that so much of having a relationship to food and food stories, they also connect us to life and healing. And anthropologists say that when food falls apart, society disintegrate. So, and then the yoga comes in, the care of the body, connecting the mind to the body. And, of course, when the mind is connected to the body in harmony and the body is in harmony with the environment, that's the function of myth, according to Campbell. We're in harmony with ourselves. And then there's always a relaxation component. So all these things I'm going to talk about, when I have time, I'll talk more about my story time yoga theory and some more yoga therapy things. But I thought I would focus on tonight is what I've been doing with here in St. Croix, especially with, I do some work at the Queen Louise Home for Children, which is the only residential foster home in the Virgin Islands around St. Croix, and working with these youth. Because I always feel like those youth, those troubled youth, are me. They're who I was as a child growing up and searching for a story, something to make meaning out of my chaotic household, and finding those stories and connecting to those stories and being inspired by them and inspiring my younger sister, who I pass these stories on and give her hope. And I learned mythology of India and early on, with many different religions influenced me. But when I go to teach children, that's my main motivation, is to reach back into my childhood and healing. So I also teach at my children's school, which is the Good Hope School here in St. Croix. And you may have heard that the largest employer on St. Croix is Provenza Oil Refinery. And in January, they announced they were shutting down. One small reason of why your gas prices are so high. But, of course, it just devastated the island. And a full third of the students who go to Good Hope are Provenza families that pay for the tuition. And so there's been quite an impact, quite an expensive loss and grief, really. Families are uprooted, will have to leave the island. A great deal of stress. And within the schools, in the classrooms, not only that stress and loss, but you know, anger and acting out. So I had been asked to come in and do some yoga. I've been doing it before with some of the teens and health for stress release and using story. So when I start out a class, going into these classrooms, it is a ritual. It is a storytelling and yoga to spend time and space. You enter, you know, sacred space, stepping out of profane space. And so we set it up as a ritual where the experience of the story and the yoga happens, because that's what we're giving children or the adult, a listener, this experience. And it's typically I take out a little puppet, and that puppet I'll do story making with. What is it? Is it a boy or a girl? And for these types of classes where I'm working with stress relief or grief, I bring out a crow puppet, you know, talks about difficult situations. And puppets are important, you know, in play therapy, because the projection, you know, what is a child thinking of? And puppets also disarm, you know, any fear that they may have initially between you and the child. So puppets make a great way of playing with story. You know, what is the child, what is the crow like? What is it not like? And it's fun to just start out that way and get kids, you know, imagination hats on. You know, I've done things, too, about pulling out of my pocket and imagination hat, warming up the stretching out the arms, bringing in the body. Anytime just stretching out the arms, pretending we're stretching out a cap, and then massaging the skull and massaging the ears and getting ready for listening. You know, listening lotus position, and you begin to focus on the breath. And the breathing is something that I really emphasize to children. And adults, too, so few people really know how to breathe. And breathing is one of the most essential things in life, but it's pranayama in yoga, prana, that chi, the life force, being able to breathe in and out. And breathing is something that connects you immediately to the body, immediately to the present moment. And breathing calms you down. Breathing, a calm, balanced breathing, rhythmic breathing, is a balanced, calm mind. The studies show you have an upset mind, you know, frenzied mind, you're pretty sure there's breathing problems going on. Stroke victims typically have tight diaphragms. Breathing brings in the whole diaphragm, pumps the lymph system. It's one of the most important things in yoga, in my opinion, and what I really help children focus on. of course, breathing in the outward breath, the apana vayu, the downward flow of energy, it kicks in the parasympathetic nervous system and relaxes. In trauma, children who have trauma, the nervous system is fried. Stress fried, upward energy, fear lifts you up out of the body, out of the earth, into the shoulders and that gripping fear. So I emphasize children to breathe and to calm themselves through the breath and releasing on the down, outward breath. And these children I work with are everywhere between preschool up through high school. And I typically just modify it for the age group. One of the first stories I will tell them is the Chinese story of the elephant and the bird. How a little elephant is walking through the forest one day and comes upon a bird on its back with its little legs kicking upward towards the sky. The elephant asks him, "What are you doing, little bird?" And the bird says, "Well, I heard the sky is going to fall." The elephant laughs, "Well, what do you think, you, a little bird, could do anything if the sky should fall?" And the little bird says, "Well, whenever it does, I will be ready to do my part." So a simple little story like that, I'll move into how do we do our part if the sky is falling? When we parents lose our jobs, or hurricane, we get hurricanes here, what are we going to do? Are we going to freak out, stress out? Or can we do our part and find our breath? Get clear on breath. My dog brought some strange mongoose in the bushes. So that breath, tuning them in, and using the story as the guide. Because again, that story, the image, it drops kids into their body. Listening is like meditation. And some way to immediately, the image is in the body. Our world is so externally focused with kids that they don't have much chance to have that access to their depth. The image, story does put them in touch with the body and the image. And the image does arise out of the body, arises out of the psyche, as Campbell will say. These images of paradise, they naturally bubble up out of the soul, the psyche. So after that, I focus on the body, getting in touch with the body, meditating on the body, having children notice your feet. Notice your feet, the space where your feet touches the floor. Notice your clothing touching your skin. Notice the air on your skin. Notice your hands touching your lap. Notice your bottom touching your lap. Notice the chair beneath you. So anyways, to get the, it's the mind resting on the body. It's very effective to cut the thinking. And continuing with the breath, in and out breath with children, I will help them to notice any thoughts, negative thoughts. You notice that we're thinking, "Oh no, hurricane coming." That's a thought. And with the youngest kids, I like to emphasize, lift up my arm and make my fingers into scissors, and I'm going to cut, cut, cut that thought. I'm just going to cut it. I'm going to bring it back to my breath. Or I'll teach them about mantra, and I keep it secular. Like out of the yoga class, I teach them Om Mani Padme Hum or something. But I will use a limberjack by the end of the class, that little Appalachian folk toy. And I will say, when my mind is busy and I'm worried, I use the words love and peace and happiness. And I will put that to the Appalachian folk toy and dance, and I'll sing love and peace and happiness, love and peace and happiness, love and peace and happiness all through the world. In some way to make mantra. To cut the thinking, cut the negative thinking, because mantra does protect the mind. And so I usually, move through this at a pretty good clip when I'm teaching. And then one of the things the teachers have asked me, that the kids can be pushy to each other and are not working together. So we've probably all heard in storytelling how the sticks are together. It's hard to break sticks. So I like to bring the body into everything. And so I'll bring my arm, ahead of me and bent at the elbow. And I'll see, as a single person, just me, my arm is weak. It can be broken. But then I'll bring the other arm in and clasp the elbows with my hands, if you see, and we're together like a bundle of sticks, and we stick together.
That doesn't mean
and we work together through difficulties in community, we're stronger. those little things like that to drop the image and make it in the body is effective for kids. Another thing I like to do is I work with, you know, poetry. I use a Basho poem. Ever since my house burned down, I can better see the moon. And what I would do is do a vinyasa. It's a flow. And again, this is in a classroom where I may not have a lot of room, but there's standing things where we can come to standing, be present in our bodies, be aware of our body, because all of this yoga is about svadhyaya, which is self-awareness, self-reflection, really, being able to see ourselves, see our behavior, see our attitude, see our story. We could talk about that more, why image and fairy tale metaphor helps us, that third person, see us better, so that we make better choices and be better self-regulated and be more present. So, you know, through some body movements of being a house with our hands raised above our head, and then the burning down like a mime, squatting. Squatting poses ground us in the body, strengthening the body, and then inhaling back up, raising the arms up to a moon. And the stories I tend to select don't have to be super didactic, but, you know, letting them know the house burned down, now I can see the moon, to help kids realize that how can you really judge what's going on? Yes, mom and dad are scared, there's difficulties, but we have a choice. We can write our story how we're going to be, and we can use these tools of breathing, staying present, community, like stick together, and be strong in yoga, cut the negative thinking. So, again, always putting the story into the body, having them listen through the body. And again, that's all kinesthetic learning, connecting neurons and accessing that depth, putting the mind into the body. But then I will move typically into another story, a main story, because story time yoga classes is always a beginning, a middle, and an end, so it's a fulfilling, you know, sense of the experience. But those are all like the intro, setting the theme, building up on the tools of breathing, focusing the mind, readying the body. And then I'll tell a main story, typically to a theme. I tend to choose stories. My first book, Storytime Yoga, Teaching Yoga to Children Through Story. Folk, multicultural folk tales, teaching tales that boost self-esteem, like The Peddler's Dream is like my signature story of follow your heart, follow your dream. And then I have like The Lion's Whiskers about finding the virtues of patience, and or The Magic Pear Tree about non-greediness and things like that. And they reenact the story and they learn story structure. And in my second book, The Treasure in Your Heart, Yoga and Stories for Peaceful Children with Ella Sims, the forward form, it does focus on how are we going to live in the world? How can we be peaceful and cope with life? You know, life hurts. It's difficult. And the yamas and niyamas in yoga are ethical and moral principles, kind of like the Ten Commandments, you can say, that teach us how to live in the world towards ourselves and others. And Campbell always said, if you really want to help people, teach them how to live in the world. How are they going to deal? So the stories I typically choose are a little bit more about how to deal with life. You know, Santosha, how are you going to be content? You may have heard that story of the stone cutter. They're satisfied, always wanting more. What children can experience through the story, the end of that, oh, they're satisfied. Because storytelling, they realize that this builds up resources. Kids just know through their story they can recall these experiences and draw upon that information for future reference. And I've used stories in Good Hope School. I use this Chinese of maybe, maybe not. Very ancient story that when a man's horse runs off, he goes to his neighbor, oh, it's the worst thing that could happen to me, isn't it? Maybe. Maybe not. The maybe says. Of course, the horse comes back with a horse of fine breeding stock. Oh, this is the greatest thing that could happen to me. I'm going to breed them and I'll be rich. Isn't that the best thing that could happen to me, neighbor? Maybe. Maybe not. And, of course, the farmer sets about breeding the horses. He's becoming wealthy. He gets his son into the business. But one day, son falls off the horse, breaks his leg. Oh, it can't help me now. I'm ruined. Isn't that the worst thing that could happen to me, neighbor? Maybe. Maybe not. And the next day, the northern invading armies sweep through town and press all the able-bodied young men into the army, except they don't take the farmer's son because his leg is broken. And the children, they know this. They know by then, oh, maybe, maybe not. Or they get it. They're even the youngest kids. They can realize this connection of, oh, how can we judge? His leg was broken. That we can just accept it. And that's a lot of what I like to use. You know, the stories I'm drawn to are always just out of my own practice, my own life's journey. And to see and accept life as all of it is, Nietzsche is Superman. You know, just recognizing that all of life you can't judge. It just is. Have the clarity and accept. It's all the way things hang together. Another story that I use is the jewel in the well, and I thought this was appropriate because of the unemployment. A lot of the families are so stressed and looking for work and have to leave Ireland. And the story of a woman, old woman who goes to the well and finds a jewel down there that's been dropped, perhaps by some king passing by, but then a young man who's very troubled and if I have to go to another town for work, there's no work here. Oh, I'm so worried. Of course, she gives him the jewel, and he is so grateful, and weeks later returns and says, I want something else from you. I want that inside you that was able to just give me that jewel without a second thought. So the children immediately would get it. One kid, third grader's hand shot up, my father's looking for work. And for the child to be able to articulate what's going on, stories and give them that reference, the vehicle for them to verbalize their fears and discuss it in a safe place. I find that, you know, whatever happens, the trauma, it's not the trauma that happened, it's the inability to express it. And also through the metaphor, to be able to express it through the metaphor of the story and understand one's own life and what's going on and to, you know, self-calm and self-regulate. Because of the story. So just another example of, and of course with the child, I'd say, okay, we talk about it and we would talk about the tools we have. Okay, so there's fear, there's uncertainty in the world, but we can't judge, right? Maybe this is okay, that you're going to find work, go to a different town. We'll get through because we have community. We're sticking together with each other. We have our breath. We can show up. We can cut the negative thinking if we're worried. We can practice yoga and make ourselves stronger. We can breathe out and let go. And there's another story that I would tell to preschoolers, the armadillo who wanted to sing. It's from Bolivia, in which an armadillo comes across frogs and crickets and birds, and they all sing so lovely that when the armadillo opens his mouth, he doesn't sing very well, and they all make fun of him, and he's so hurt by that. But the shaman gives him his race by transforming him into a flute, and then he can sing. And it's always amazing that after the story, and you know, so what do you think about that story? Little kids, 3, 4 years old, will say, I remember this girl said she didn't want to play with me anymore. You hurt my feelings. So these kids, through the vehicle of the story, are able to, you know, it bubbles up. They identify with the story, and they can see themselves clearly and to discuss it. And talk about this, and that breaks up any energy that's stuck to be able to share and communicate. So after that main storytelling session, I always go into some kind of meditation. It's the final piece of the class, the ritual. And of course, I use imagery, you know, closing their eyes, listening to the bell. And there's something that I use called yoga nidra, and nidra means sleep. And just go through the body parts. For little kids, the feet, the legs, the knees, the thighs, the hips, the belly, your arms, hands, your chest, your chin, your mouth, your cheeks, nose, eyes, ears, the whole head, the whole body. And that immediately, you know, kids, the mind is forced to rest on the body. Same thing in yoga. Slows the mind down, stops the mind, gives a little bit of space for some clarity to enter. So some kind of relaxation for the children to, you know, shavasana really, and that's the corpse pose when everything is integrated, all the practices integrated, the self-reflection, and whole processing takes place. And then when they come out, they feel great. You talk about things, what'd you see? I remember one kid years ago said, "But our dog died." You know, I mean, they express these things. That's why I'm convinced, as they call this yoga play therapy, that these stories and working with the body and being able to just connect to those depths, there's so much there that we can bring up. And for little children to talk about this feeling early, so much depression and rage is really just grief. We do not grieve enough as a culture, publicly, or don't know how to grieve. And so many children, these stories, the yoga, give us a safe place to grieve through and talk about that, because otherwise it shows up as violence and anger and depression later, and we can really, early intervention is taking care of children, taking care of youth. And as you see, if you've ever seen The Hunger Games, you see what is our culture sacrifice? You know, it's the youth, it's the young feminine, the young people are sacrificed. And they're getting this. They're getting it through their young adult literature. Young adult literature is the hottest thing out there these days, because those are the stories that are being told, these tough stories. And these kids are hungry for it. And there's even an article in the New York Times recently about the rise of creative writing and memoir and MFA programs are booming, because talk therapy is not working anymore, because psychiatrists only prescribe pills these days. But it is about telling our stories, the mothers and the fathers. And I, again, believe that it's in the body. There's a story in the body. And for older kids, teen mythic yoga, what is the myth? You know, you should amplify your fantasies, as Carl Jung said, and to look at your myth and to begin to depersonalize, you know, take off that mask, persona, this mask, and strip away the ego that you are clouded with, and start to recognize your true self. So you can say, neti, neti, not this, not this, and start to bring that awareness into your addictions or your neuroses or your fears, and look at it, and it becomes art. It becomes life as a joy, and all that love just comes forth from the stories, from the practice, from the yoga. Of course, I do emphasize with teens, especially, you know, about suicide prevention. My husband died by his own hand 9 years ago when I started Storytime Yoga. Of course, my youngest sister also took her life December 29th. And so there's my journey of my own life with healing with yoga and stories and overcoming depression with yoga and stories. And I always emphasize to others that, you know, it's okay to talk about your feelings, especially among youth and men. You know, that you got to be some kind of shut down your feelings. And I tell them it's okay to talk about, you know, if you're feeling bad, you think it's okay to get help. You know, if someone talks about suicide, you get help. And tell them that, yeah, that these are things that we can talk about, especially in the era of vets coming back from Iraq and a lot of suicide rates. And I like to use the story of two frogs that I first learned from Paramhansa Yogananda. You probably have heard it before, too. But two frogs jump into a pail of milk. Of course, they're sure to drown. They can't get out of the pail of milk. Their little legs are flailing around frantically. And, oh, first frog says, "I'm going to drown. I can't keep going." The other frog says, "Keep going. Don't give up. Don't give up." Of course, the other one, "I can't. I give up. It's too hard." Drown. But the second frog is like, "As long as there's ounce of strength in my body, I will not give up. I will not give up." So the frog is just churning and churning and churning until he feels something solid beneath his little feet. And it's butter. Turn that milk into butter, could hop out, and save his life. So I think that story is a capacity to heal, to reach into those deep, dark areas of our souls and bring light. It is when you look into the abyss and all that great suffering is when the light comes and great joy and love. I don't know if I could stop here. I can keep talking about, you know, things. Or if anybody wants to be able to open up to questions now, I could be talking for about a half an hour. It's 9:33.
this is a wonderful place just to stop and see if anyone wants to come off of their mute and ask a question or share a thought or reflection that has come to them as Sydney's talked. And if there are none, we'll go right back to you, Sydney. We could hear you all night.
Oh, well, thanks. I have lots. It's funny. My office was the beach today. I've had terrible computer problems. The electricity here eats computers. Luckily, these iPhones, so I was on the beach. I can write tons of things and tell you tons of things. So it's easier if you ask me a question, and then I can teach to your question. Or if you have any questions about how we use yoga or stories about story time yoga or yoga play therapy, or I can just keep talking.
Hello, this is Tony Toledo.
Hi, Tony.
And I've never done yoga, but I was fascinated with the idea, and I like the idea of just what you're saying about, you know, being aware of my body and listening. What's the thing for somebody like me who's never done anything with yoga before, just to get started, to dip my toe into it?
Oh, well, wonderful that you would like to try it out. You know, yoga's for everybody, and yoga means union. Now, there's so many different types of yoga, and really, you know, yoga is union with yourself. Connecting to the self, so and becoming self-aware. So anything you do is really your yoga. There's so many hatha yoga, the craze. Now it is the body. It is the yoga postures that bring us into muscular skeletal alignment and bring our mind into harmony with our body. I mean, walking. Walking is one of the greatest yogas you can do because the rhythm of the muscles and moving from your core. Well, I always start people with breathing. To sit down and start meditating, sit in the garden and start breathing and start becoming aware of your mind. And just for a minute, you know, there's going to be a rising thought like, oh, what's the price of canned corn today? Or why didn't that person ask me to the prom when I was in high school? You know, all of those 10,000 thoughts arise. And if we can just notice it, I'm thinking, label it as thinking, and bring it back to the breath, bring it back to this breadfruit tree in your garden, and being aware of that, because then that can start to give you some space between your thoughts, your ego mind, and of course the deep, and get some clarity, and your mind becomes clear and strong. You start to have a different reference instead of your desires and fears and all the loops of complexes and so forth that's influencing your thoughts. You know, it's your true self, your true mind there. And it brings strength and clarity. So I think, you know, breathing, deep inhalation, that you can lie on your belly so you can strengthen your diaphragm or put some kind of a sandbag type, something heavy to strengthen that diaphragm and full breathing and then slow exhalation with the breathing. It can transform your life. A, you'll feel better. B, it really rings out, you know, pranayama, it rings out the stress. And I call it like Drano for the soul. it just gets down in like a rotor router and unplugs whatever is blocked down there in dark recesses of your cellular structure and lets it free. And then, of course, you know, taking a class. I mean, the issue with yoga these days, you think like, you got to do some kind of power stuff. And I used to do that, but I'm 45 now, and to me, I do maintenance yoga. I move my body, and the slightest movements and so forth, you can do so much. So you shouldn't do something that's going to strain you, but do simple things like the breathing and the meditation and then walking. And then you can join a class of gentle yoga, I like it, you know, call it, and progress from there. But there's so many different types of yoga. I mean, I find that stories are the yoga. The mind teaches that storytelling is the yoga. Stories are the thing that links you, the metaphor, the image. You know, the imago Dei, the image of God, that's you. That's the reflection. Metaphor, as Campbell will say, has one foot in reality and one foot in the transcendent. So, you know, fish or a bird or a flower, those things have metaphorical implications in the transcendent world. They give us a glimpse, and revealing Maya. There's something in this depth that I'm convinced, if I believe in any God, there's something in the depth, there's something that informs nature. the pure going out in nature to me is the highest form of worship and yoga, to go look at the horizon on the ocean and the sky. And then there's ascetic arrest that pitches you out of your ordinary circumstance and into this ecstatic zone, which we're missing from our society. And that's the purpose of this, is to pitch you out. You know, this is all Campbell that I'm saying here, but spending time in nature, doing the physical yoga, of course, never straying, but it's listening to the intuitive side. It's all I'm doing is, and when I opened up this session, it's like, I'm just putting you in touch with your depth, the story, the image, the yoga, the body. That's where, that's our other half of our mind. Jung has four functions of the mind, right? Thinking, feeling, sensing, and intuiting. And we're only using just that intellectual capacity. The whole body's been neglected, and it's just the storehouses of potential and wisdom for you right there. Self-actualization at your fingertips. So it's a personal journey. There's so many different types of yoga. You know, whether you can do the hot yoga or sit down on the cushion and meditate. You can start somewhere. Hope that helps you answer that question.
Great. Thanks.
You're welcome. Anybody else?
Hello. Can anybody hear me?
Hi, yes.
Hi.
Good evening.
This is Liz Nichols, and I am a storyteller and longtime yoga practitioner, and so I've started experimenting with doing a couple of programs for mostly kids and some for families with incorporating some yoga, starting with Hindu mythology. But I'm struggling, and I'm wondering if you could talk to this about... you know, because I am more the storyteller and I'm not a yoga teacher, my focus is more on the stories. But I guess my question is sort of a very practical one of what do you think works best in terms of integrating the yoga and the stories? Do you tell the story all in one piece, or, you know, I've tried the idea of teaching, saying, well, I'm going to tell a story and I want to teach you these poses beforehand so that when we get to that place in the story, we can all do it together. Anyway, I'm just really interested with all your experience you've had, what flows well and keeps kids' attention.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Thank you for asking that question. And that's how the story time yoga method, how I teach and do trainings on is a system that it keeps things flowing. You know, there is that little ritual, like I said, it keeps kids engaged. For the youngest set, you know, preschool through, you know, second, third grade, you know, it's the dog and pony show. You know, it's keeping them entertained through you as the storyteller, or it's the words and the story and the engagement of the body. I set it up at the beginning, you know, the breathing and some exercises, but the core is the story. And I typically will always tell the story in completion, and they're short stories, you know, because I do believe in, you know, that attention, the focus. I mean, It never fails. A four-year-old or an ADHD kid, they're spellbound. They're enraptured. They're held by the image in the body. They're right there. They're, you know, sort of hypnotic. And you can hold a room of 50 kids, you know, little kids. And they're, how did you do it? You know, it's the story. So I believe for our sake of, you know, television jumping around everybody's consciousness, can't hold a thought, you know, commercial interruptions that tell the whole story. And my stories tend to be short, you know, no more than 5 minutes to hold that attention. And then I say, everybody up, now you're going to help me retell the story. And this is how, you know, educate, you know, I called it the body-centered education. What's the story about? Well, who is the story about? It's about character and story structure. You know, my main story I'll use, for example, is the peddler's dream. It's the peddler of Gotham and many different variations on that story. But, you know, it's about a peddler, and we will take a warrior pose. I always use the standing pose of warrior as the main character. You know, what happens to him? You know, or I'll lead the story along, you know, what's next to his house? A tree, an apple tree, and we'll take tree pose. And what happens? There's a dream. And what did he do? Did he go to London? Yes. I'll coax them along, but I'm always asking questions.
That's
to get
great.
Them. Because so many kids are passive. You know, people tend to like, let's do this and let's do that. But I set it up as this is a little hour or half hour that this is going to happen. And what's this and what's that? So that it piques their critical thinking. So much stuff is spoon-fed to kids these days, and they're bored. They're really bored. This stuff wakes them up on the inside, and they're excited. It's participatory consciousness. You know, we're not just consuming stuff, a whole consumer culture. This is participatory. So I'll tell, you know, and for the older kids, I'll use themes in the beginning. I will tell the story. And sometimes with older kids, we'll start, you know, the yoga nidra is a perfect place to tell stories. And I call it sleepy time yoga or a story siesta to get kids really relaxed and tell them a story. And something with adult class, to tell them a short wisdom story, matter-of-factly, and tie it in with the yoga theme. Hindu myths, I use the story of Vishnu's dream, you know, how Vishnu, floating on eternity on the back of Sesha Ananda, the great one-hundred-headed snake, you know, he dreams out of his navel after Lakshmi massaging his feet, you know, the whole universe from his flower, a lotus comes on the water, and out pops Brahma, pure mind. I'm like, well, what are you creating? It's a metaphor. This is your dream. This is your reality.
Oh.
And what are you bringing into consciousness? That's what I call my mythic yoga routines, and to relate your life to the myth or discover your own myth. Because, again, there is no mythology. All the old religions that assuaged our fear of death don't serve us anymore. So you are to make your own, you know, amplify your fantasies, personify it, and what's your myth? I'm the queen of Bohemia. I'm not out of delusion, but that's my plaything to help me see myself and make my own myth and help me cope with the world. So that's how I use Hindu myth for setting the theme in a class for older kids, teens, adults, and you know, fifth grade, sixth grade. But I always do tell the story. I mean, there's appropriate things that you can, you know, tell the story completely. You can break it up, but I tend to tell the whole story, because it is a listening. It is a meditation. You should listen to the whole story. Hope that helps.
That's great. Thank you. That's so helpful.
I do two trainings, I have online trainings in my book that explain really everything. But it is using your own, you know, after you think about when you tell stories, it comes out of this practice and teaching, using your own experience and a lot of stuff I'll discover on the spot from teaching what works and what doesn't work. So, thank you for asking that question. How's your mask? Anybody else? Okay. Let's see. Let's see what else I can talk about.
This is Lanny, and I actually could ask a question. As a therapist, I know how much emotion often does reside in the body, and I've heard you talk about how you you weave the yoga into the story, but do you ever start with when a child brings to you one of their stories or characters and you sense there's emotion in the body and you find the right yoga to go with that to help with release it, sort of working from the opposite direction?
Yes. For young kids, typically, like, I'll even ask them, like, dreams and so forth, and what did you dream about last night? And we'll put yoga stories to it. But with teens especially, I'll say, so what's going on in your life? And then when I teach adults, I don't just like, okay, we're going to do back bends. I'm like, what's going on? You know, my shoulders hurt or I'm stressed. Or with teens, they'll say, like, to the readers, I'm so stressed about school, or I think girls are talking behind my back, or and so I do try and pull a story out that will speak to their experience to teach to yoga, which is, you know, the same things about breathing, calming down. There's a Sufi story I like to use. It's called The Heart That No Longer Moves, in which a man rushes into his master and says, Master, Master, we're ruined. Our ship is lost at sea, all of the goods. Our merchandise is lost. We're bankrupt. Ugh, horrible. And the master looks down. Says, thank you for that meeting. next day, servant comes in. Master, master, great news. It was a mistake. That wasn't our ship. Everything's okay. We're still rich. Woo-hoo, isn't that great? Master looks down. Okay, thank you for that news. And the servant says, Master, I don't understand. I come in with bad news and you just look down. And I come in with good news and you just look down. What's that all about? And he says, oh, each time I was checking to make sure my heart did not move. In yoga, it teaches, you know, the sage is someone who is not swayed by sorrow or joy. You know, or, you know, we feel that, but you're not so carried off by it, not so fucked up into it. So I would teach somebody who's really stressed out or upset about, you know, the teens is one of the stories I would tell them. So I do try and teach to that, you know, here's, you know, what's the ailment? Here's the medicine of story. I mean, there's actually Ayurvedic storytelling out there. I haven't been able to locate. Because Ayurveda is about treating the person according to their doshas, to their body, to what they need. And I do think those are the best storytellers and the teachers. What does this person need? You know, rather than I going in there and here's what you need. You know, I'm like, hopefully have a readiness bag of stories I can pull out. The same thing with my classes. If, you know, I don't have a set thing. I kind of scan, know what's going on, feel the energy of the class. Oh, maybe they need this. You know, let's start with relaxation and meditation. Or let's really do some grounding poses. So I do try to see what kids need and give them a story that will relate to it and the yoga. And that's what, you know, Ayurveda does. It gives you a specific yoga pose. You know, you need to do back bends and heart openers to let go of grief and our collapsed, rounded back body covering our heart. Let's open the heart. Or maybe like for self-esteem, that third chakra area, you know, build up the core or root chakra issue, anything of, you know, extreme fear or insecurities, you know, leg standing poses, grounding poses. You know, exactly, the body is that metaphor and reflection of the mind. You know, I do think our bodies are reflections of what we're thinking about, and the illnesses can manifest, and you can find stories to speak to it. Just as much as you can recommend a yoga for it as well, posture, what ails you. And I think there is a space for private yoga therapy for children and for families. All my children's families' yoga classes are, I teach families how to come together for an hour once a week, and I call it the family yoga and storytelling hour. Let's breathe together. Let's tell a story together and let's communicate. You know, if Dad lost his job, you know, we're going to have to stop spending money. Let's tell a story to relate to that. Or let's talk about, I'll just tell you a story when I was a little kid. And those are the things that really forge relationships and bonds and heal people. The more I think it's about community. You know, I talk about, like, we go to Al-Anon and AA and stuff. It's that community that keeps us together, and the sangha, the group, we need each other to get us through. So I hope that answers your question, Lonnie.
Very much so, thank you. Anybody else?
Silencio. Yeah, so I'm just going to say, I think I did mention that, you know, ADHD, AD, addiction, depression, those are those vata imbalances, and that yoga can be that lifeboat to really help us stay afloat on those ups and downs, the waves of life. It brings you into that center point that you can just keep going and things get better. And those stories are, you know, the stories of our lives, the fantasies, the folk tales. I think a time is coming again. There's something that up in the world. You can just feel it. Very tangible and palpable. And people are wanting to go back to art, to articulate our feelings and to grieve. You've seen the Hunger Games. I think Suzanne Collins, the author, said, you know, she wanted to give place for kids to grieve. And I think that's what we're all going to be doing on a collective level. And out of that comes that art, the stories. They really are those compasses. The compass that guides us back to our hearts.
Sydney, thank you for all the wonderful wisdom and tools you shared with us tonight. We're so delighted that all of you could join us, and stay tuned. We have Elizabeth Ellis coming next month, and we'll get that date and time to you all soon. We wish you all a happy Passover and Easter, and welcome to spring.
Thank you. Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much. Namaste. So grateful.
Take care.
Thank you.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Good night. Om Shanti.